Hi, welcome to History's Great Speeches. I'm Charles Featherston, voice artist, narrator and compiler of the series. Please like or subscribe and feel free to contact me via Bandcamp, Podbean, Facebook or Patreon to let me know speeches or time periods you'd like to see covered. You can find a full set of links at my website, charlesfeatherston.uk. The Second Philippic, on Philip's actions and character. In all the speeches, men of Athens, about Philip's measures and infringements of the peace, I observe that statements made on our behalf are thought just and generous, and all who accuse Philip are heard with approbation. Yet nothing I may say that is proper, or for the sake of which the speeches are worth hearing, is done. To this point are the affairs of Athens brought, that the more fully and clearly one convicts Philip of violating the peace with you and plotting against the whole of Greece, the more difficult it becomes to advise you how to act. The cause lies in all of us Athenians, that when we ought to oppose an ambitious power by deeds and actions, not by words, we men of the hustings shrink from our duty of moving and advising, for fear of your displeasure, and only declaim on the heinousness and atrocity of Philip's conduct. You of the assembly, though better instructed than Philip to argue justly, or comprehend the argument of another, to check him in the execution of his designs, are totally unprepared. The result is inevitable, I imagine, and perhaps just. You each succeed better in what you are busy and earnest about, Philip in actions, you in words. If you are still satisfied with using the better arguments, it is an easy matter, and there is no trouble. But if we are to take measures for the correction of these evils, to prevent their insensible progress and the rising up of a mighty power against which we could have no defence, then our course of deliberation is not the same as formerly. The orators, and you that hear them, must prefer good and salutary counsels to those which are easy and agreeable. First, men of Athens, if anyone regards without uneasiness the might and dominion of Philip, and imagines that it threatens no danger to the state, or that all his preparations are not against you, I marvel, and would entreat you every one to hear briefly from me the reasons why I am led to form a contrary expectation, and wherefore I deem Philip an enemy. That, if I appear to have the clearer foresight, you may hearken to me. If they who have such confidence and trust in Philip, you may give your adherence to them. Thus then I reason, Athenians. What did Philip first make himself master of after the peace, Thermopylae and the Phocian state? Well, and how used he his power? He chose to act for the benefit of Thebes, not of Athens. Why so? Because, I conceive, measuring his calculations by ambition, by his desire of universal empire, without regard to peace, quiet, or justice, he saw plainly that to a people of our character and principles nothing could he offer or give that would induce you for self-interest to sacrifice any of the Greeks to him. He sees that you, having respect for justice, dreading the infamy of the thing, and exercising proper forethought, would oppose him in any such attempt as much as if you were at war. But the Thebans he expected, and events proved him right, would, in return for the services done them, allow him in everything else to have his way, and, so far from thwarting or impeding him, would fight on his side if he required it. From the same persuasion he befriended lately the Messenians and Argives, which is the highest panegyric upon you, Athenians. For you are adjudged by these proceedings to be the only people incapable of betraying for lucre the national rights of Greece, or bartering your attachment to her for any obligation or benefit. And this opinion of you, that, so different, of the Argives and Thebans, he has naturally formed, not only from a view of the present times, but by a reflection on the past. For assuredly he finds and hears that your ancestors, who might have governed the rest of Greece on terms of submitting to Persia, not only spurned the proposal when Alexander, in words, but the forefathers of the Argives and Thebans, they either joined the barbarians' army or did not oppose it, and therefore he knows that both will selfishly embrace their advantage without considering the common interest of the Greeks. He thought then, if he chose your friendship, it must be on just principles. If he attached himself to them, he should find auxiliaries of his ambition. This is the reason of his preferring them to you, both then and now. For he certainly does not see them with a larger navy than you, nor has he acquired an inland empire and renounced that of the sea and the ports, nor does he forget the professions and promises on which he obtained the peace. Well, it may be said he knew all this, yet he so acted, not from ambition or the motives which I charge, but because the demands of the Thebans were more equitable than yours. Of all pleas, this now is the least open to him. He that bids the Lacedaemonians resign Messene, how can he pretend, when he delivered Orchomenos and Coroneia to the Thebans, to have acted on a conviction of justice? But forsooth he was compelled. This plea remains. He made concessions against his will, being surrounded by Thessalian horse and Theban infantry. Excellent. So of his intentions they talk. He will mistrust the Thebans, and some carry news about that he will fortify Elateia. All this he intends and will intend, I dare say. But to attack the Lacedaemonians on behalf of Messene and Argos he does not intend. He actually sends mercenaries and money into the country, and is expected himself with a great force. The Lacedaemonians, who are enemies of Thebes, he overthrows. The Phocians, whom he himself before destroyed, will he now preserve? And who can believe this? I cannot think that Philip, either if he was forced into his former measures, or if he were now giving up the Thebans, would pertinaciously oppose their enemies. His present conduct rather shows that he adopted those measures by choice. All things prove to a correct observer that his whole plan of action is against our state. And this has now become to him a sort of necessity. Consider, he desires empire, he conceives you to be his only opponents. He has been for some time wronging you, as his own conscience best informs him, since, by retaining what belongs to you, he secures the rest of his dominion. Had he given up Amphipolis and Potidiae, he deemed himself unsafe at home. He knows, therefore, both that he is plotting against you and that you are unaware of it. And, supposing you to have intelligence, he thinks you must hate him. He is alarmed, expecting some disaster, if you get the chance, unless he hastens to prevent you. Therefore he is awake and on the watch against us. He caught certain people, Thebans, and people in Peloponnesus of the like views, who from cupidity, he thinks, will be satisfied with the present, and from dullness of understanding will foresee none of the consequences. And yet men of even moderate sense might notice striking facts, which I had occasion to quote to the Messenians and Argives, and perhaps it is better they should be repeated to you. You men of Messene, said I, how do you think the Olynthians would have brooked to hear anything against Philip at those times, when he surrendered to them Anthemus, which all former kings of Macedonia claimed, when he cast out the Athenian colonists and gave them Poptidiae, taking on himself your enmity and giving them the land to enjoy? Think you they expected such treatment as they got, or would have believed it if they had been told? Nevertheless, said I, they, after enjoying for a short time the land of others, are for a long time deprived by him of their own, shamefully expelled, not only vanquished, but betrayed by one another and sold. In truth, these too close connections with despots are not safe for republics. The Thessalians again, think you, said I, when he ejected their tyrants and gave back Nicaea and Magnesia, they expected to have the decemvirate which is now established? Or that he who restored the meeting at Pylae would take away their revenues? Surely not. And yet these things have occurred, as all mankind may know. You behold Philip, I said, as dispenser of gifts and promises. Pray, if you are wise, that you may never know him for a cheat and a deceiver. By Jupiter, I said, there are manifold contrivances for the guarding and defending of cities, as ramparts, walls, trenches, and the like. These are all made with hands and require expense. But there is one common safeguard in the nature of prudent men, which is a good security for all, but especially for democracies against despots. What do I mean? Mistrust. Keep this, hold to this, preserve this only, and you can never be injured. What do you desire? Freedom? Then see you not that Philip's very titles are at variance therewith? Every king and despot is a foe to freedom, an antagonist to laws. Will you not beware, I said, lest, seeking deliverance from war, you find a master? They heard me with a tumult of approbation, and many other speeches they heard from the ambassadors, both in my presence and afterward. Yet none the more, as it appears, will they keep aloof from Philip's friendship and promises. And no wonder that Messenians and certain Peloponnesians should act contrary to what their reason approves. But you, who understand yourselves, and by us orators are told how you are plotted against, how you are enclosed, you, I fear, to escape present exertion, will come to ruin ere you are aware. So doth the moment case and indulgence prevail over distant advantage. As to your measures, you will in prudence, I presume, consult hereafter by yourselves. I will furnish you with such an answer as it becomes the assembly to decide upon. Here the proposed answer was read. It were just, men of Athens, to call the persons who brought those promises on the faith whereof you concluded peace. For I should never have submitted to go as ambassador, and you would certainly not have discontinued the war, had you supposed that Philip, on obtaining peace, would act thus. But the statements then made were very different. Aye, and others you should call. Whom? The men who declared, after the peace, when I had returned from my second mission, that for the oaths, when, perceiving your delusion, I gave warning, and protested, and opposed the abandonment of Thermopylae and the Phocians. That I, being a water drinker, was naturally a churlish and morose fellow. That Philip, if he passed the straits, would do just as you desired, fortify Thespiae and Plataeae, humble the Thebans, cut through the Chersonese at his own expense, and give you Oropus and Euboea in exchange for Amphipolis. All these declarations on the hustings I am sure you remember, though you are not famous for remembering injuries. And the most disgraceful thing of all, you voted in your confidence that this same peace should descend to your posterity. So completely were you misled. Why mention I this now, and desire these men to be called? By the gods, I will tell you the truth frankly and without reserve. Not as I may fall a wrangling to provoke recrimination before you, get a hearing for myself. And the orator's object is not so much to sneer at the people by hinting that they are ready to hear abuse as to deter his opponents from retaliation or weaken its effect by denouncing their opposition as corrupt, and afford my old adversaries a fresh pretext for getting more from Philip, nor for the purpose of idle garrulity. But I imagine that what Philip is doing will grieve you hereafter more than it does now. I see the thing progressing, and would that my surmises were false, but I doubt it is too near already. So when you are able no longer to disregard events, when instead of hearing from me or others that these measures are against Athens, you all see it yourselves and know it for certain, I expect you will be wrathful and exasperated. My fear then, as your ambassadors have concealed the purpose for which they know they were corrupted, those who endeavour to repair what the others have lost may chance to encounter your resentment. For I see it as a practice with many to vent their anger, not upon the guilty, but on persons most in their power. While therefore the mischief is only coming and preparing, while we hear one another speak, I wish every man, though he knows it well, to be reminded who it was persuaded you to abandon Phocis and Thermopylae, by the command of which Philip commands the road to Attica and Peloponnesus, and has brought it to this, that your deliberation must be, not about claims and interests abroad, but concerning the defence of your home and a war in Attica, which will grieve every citizen when it comes, and indeed it has commenced from that day. Had you not been then deceived, there would be nothing to distress the state. Philip would certainly never have prevailed at sea and come to Attica with a fleet, nor would he have marched with a land force by Phocis and Thermopylae. He must either have acted honourably, observing the peace and keeping quiet, or been immediately in a war similar to that which made him desire the peace. Enough has been said to awaken recollection. Grant, O you gods, it be not all fully confirmed. I would have no man punished, though death he may deserve, to the damage and danger of the country.